Welcome back to part two of our conversation with Michael Walsh on Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, already in progress.
We have been discussing his new book, which you should get, and it is a must-read, called Against the Great Reset, 18 Theses Contra the New World Order. We will have the links to where you can get it if you want to buy it on Amazon and support Jeff Bezos, or who's a great resetter.
And support the New World Order.
And support the New World Order while going against it. Or we'll have other links where you can get it directly or other. I mean, I don't think there's anywhere else you can buy it. I think Barnes & Noble, wherever else do you buy books. But anyway, we're back. And CBD, I think you want to put Michael on the spot with a question.
Yes. So the last time Michael was on, we discussed the impending elections in the next couple of years, and we asked for his prognostication, and he interestingly suggested that Tulsi Gabbard was going to be the Republican vice presidential candidate, and I'd like to know if he is still with her.
Well, she's not still a Democrat anymore, is she? I told my readership that, oh no, man, she's a Democrat, she's like a World Economic Forum Nazi, and she's horrible, and she's pro-abortion and guns, and I said, just shut up and listen to me. She is going to move from the Democrats to the Republicans. Now, I think as a vice presidential candidate, oh, yeah, my other favorite is, oh, like three electoral votes. Yeah, like, yeah, that'll really win an election, you know, that kind of stupid thing. I feel that she answers all of the, or checks all the boxes, as the current cliche goes. For a female candidate, and she doesn't hurt that she's very good looking. She's been in the military. That doesn't hurt either. She's extremely articulate. I mean, she eviscerated Kamala Harris at the Democrat presidential debate, finished her off, although you knew the fix was in for her from the beginning, so they had to put her in as vice president. But I think she got red-pilled. I think people can change. And I think as a compliment to Ron DeSantis, who will clearly be the Republican nominee, because Trump's just too old, and Trump is a baby boomer, and Trump is 78, and Trump's failing. He doesn't talk as coherently as he used to. And, I mean, you know, who was it, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who said three generations of imbeciles is enough? I mean, two consecutive geriatric presidents isn't a sobering thought. So I think that Tulsi could be a very strong candidate. I could be wrong. I mean, a lot can happen between now and 2 years. But she's done all the right things in that move. Soon she'll join the Republicans. She's now campaigning for some of the Republican candidates. And I think who's better right now? I mean, look, you never know about vice presidents. And, boy, Mike Pence sure brought a lot to that ticket. But look.
Oh, Jesus. Speaking of frickin' Mike Pence, you know, the one person I really want, speaking of hurling a flaming, and we did this offline because I live in Paul Ryan's ex-hometown because he now lives in Calorama or whatever, of hurling a sack of flaming horseshit at someone, was Matt Continetti, who came out with this column as Mike Pence is going to be the next standard bearer. And I'm going, go please frickin' rotate on a goddamn flaming fire hydrant.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Well, he's also Bill Crystal's. He's Bill Crystal's son. He's Bill Crystal's son-in-law, so there you go. The son-in-law also rises.
I'm going to get back.
Mike Pence? I mean, who would vote for Mike Pence? Seriously, nobody.
His wife wouldn't vote.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody.
Sorry, Steve.
I want to get back to what Mike was talking about, and that is that the geriatric theme in Washington is profoundly destructive to America, and unfortunately, as he points out correctly, Donald Trump is too old. Ron DeSantis is the man. Trump should be the elder statesman of American conservatism. He has a bully pulpit. He should use it, and he should gracefully and forcefully hand off the presidency to Ron DeSantis. He is too old. The 80-year-olds in Congress have to be eviscerated. They have to be destroyed before we have any chance of recovering what America used to be. So, Michael, you are 100% correct.
I will say this, though. But as far as getting rid of the 80-year-olds, I mean, there are quite a few people who are in their late 20s and early 30s that they ain't exactly have all their oars in the water. I'm speaking, of course, like knuckleheads like Titicaca AOC and her ilk who are in their 30s and are out of their effing minds.
Yes.
And she may be out of her effing mind, but she attracts a lot of voters. And she's not only stupid, but she's dangerous. And that is a very toxic mix along with, the geriatric set. So we're an equal opportunity people of ditching generations, depending upon their, obviously depending upon their proclivities politically. But no, I do tend to agree with you. And there's an interesting observation. I think, Michael, you might have even said this on the last time you were here. And if I'm ripping you off, it's not intentional. But the parallels between having these, you know, people like Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi and Trump, maybe, and for sure, you know, Joe Biden. Look at the old Soviet Union and all their people. You had Konstantin Chernenko, who was half in the bag. You had Andropov, who was youngish, but still. Then you had Andropov, Chernenko, Brezhnev, Kosygin, all of these people, and they were all the leaders and the whole thing. They were 70, 80, 90, 1,000 years old, and it's the same thing. We're mirroring the Soviet Union of the old days as far as the geriatric set who are leading us to doom and destruction.
That's true, because they came out of the revolutionary generation. They were the second generation after the real revolutionaries of the 1920s. And so they were all in place by the middle to the end of the Stalinist regime. But after that, they ran out of gas because people lost their faith in the system. It didn't work. So, you know, your sister was a hooker. Your brother sold weapons out of the trunk of his car. All of that, by the way, is true. I encountered many times people trying to sell me stuff or offer me stuff in the old Soviet Union. And I came back in 1986, and I went on the Lynn Samuels show. I came back from Chernobyl, as a matter of fact, because that blew up while I was in country.
You have a nice glow about you, by the way.
I glow in the dark. I've never a problem seeing around my house.
So does my wife, but
I went on the Lynn Samuels show. Good old Lynn, great lefty, WABC, nice Jewish girl. You know, the dream person for me to be on with, because she was honest and she was good and she had a great audience and everything wasn't so split. And she said, "But you know, hey, how about that Soviet Union?" And I said, "It's a collapsing country full of crooks and whores." And I foretold at that point that Germany would be reunited within 5 years. And everybody laughed at me. And of course, I was way off, because it was 3 years that Germany was reunited, not five. But you can smell the stench of it. I think we talked about this the last time. You always smell a communist country because it stinks to high heaven. And you could smell the stench of the dying beast. And right now, our geriatric crew are all basically the children of the New Deal. I mean, they really are. I mean, Trump is born, I'm 73, I was born in 49, so that's the Truman administration. That's how old I am. But Trump's even older. And they come out of this World War II post-depression generation. Great. Thank you for your service. Goodbye. If Trump doesn't have a retirement home, then nobody has a retirement home. And if he could raise his game and stop being obsessed with the steel, whatever the truth of it may be, it's done, it's over, you have to move on. We can't, you don't fight the last war, we can't run against the results of the 2020 election. Revanchism is not going to play. Just give me a Roman like Ron DeSantis, you know?
He is wonderful at fighting.
And standards.
Absolutely. Right. Ron DeSantis is superb at fighting the next war. He knows he is one step ahead of his Democrat opponents, and
he's already doing it.
The beauty of DeSantis is he doesn't bluster, he doesn't threaten, he doesn't blah blah blah. He doesn't have rallies where he basks in the adulation of the crowd. He just does it, and after he's done it, he says, "By the way, I just cut your throat, and you are now dying." And then the guy collapses, and that's the kind of Roman I want. Believe me. I don't want threats. I want action. And I think that if DeSantis keeps that tight group around him, he's got a group of people he trusts, he's done very well. And then, you know, Trump comes out on his thing and starts complaining about DeSantis. He's not grateful. Oh, Grandpa, don't yell at the clouds, for Christ's sake. It's time to get the men who can fight this war on the battlefield.
I will agree with you and disagree with you on one point vis-a-vis the stolen election. That was the greatest crime in American history because it was the murder, the final coup de grace of America, whatever was left of it is founded right there. That cannot be ever forgotten. It cannot be forgiven. I do agree with you that necessarily we can't run on that. But at the same token, The other side is now using that, the crime with which they committed, to persecute people who, you know, who are either are complaining about it or bring or just are innocently enough bring it up. Whether it's Trump blustering, okay, I get that. But other people, you know, we still have people rotting away in political prison thanks to the Garland archipelago, and we cannot forget that. We must fight that. But I do agree with you that we can't fight the political battle of an election coming up based solely or, you know, whatever, even to a certain extent, even on that. It's got to be on the crimes that are being committed in the wake of that stolen election and what that brought about. Yes, I do. I do totally agree with you. As far as, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, like the Great Reset, the left was open about what they did in that election. You know, that famous piece by Molly Ball in Time magazine where they said, we had to make sure we won, come hell or high water. And Davos is saying, we've got the Great Reset. You all think it's a right-wing conspiracy, and it's such a conspiracy that we actually have it on our own website, because that's what we're trying to do. Good Lord, guys. If you don't learn from somebody who says he's going to kill you, then you've never learned any lesson in your entire life. And these people wanted to kill the American democracy. Davos wants to kill market capitalism, or however you want to define it. We encounter these threats, and it's our own inability to take the threat seriously that gets us in trouble. And I think by having somebody, let me finish this quick. Okay. DeSantis's generation, he's in his early 40s. He is not beholden to anybody. And he can wave the bloody shirt of the election, but not Trump's bloody shirt. That's the point. It can't look like revenge, because nobody likes that.
You know who else, by the way, told us exactly what he was going to do? And two people who told us exactly what they were going to do through history, and they actually did it. One of them was Hitler, and the other one was Muhammad. So, well, I don't know that we laughed at Muhammad, but today we do. I mean, here we have Islamic terrorism being committed anywhere in the United States or even anywhere in the world. And what does the media and what does government do? Oh, it's a lone wolf. It's some guy didn't mean, you know, whatever. Yeah. Has nothing to do with Islam. And of course, it has everything to do with Islam. And of course, if you bring that up, it's a hate crime and you'll be thrown into jail. Well, the same thing with Mr. Schicklgruber. He said what he was going to do. I'm going to take over the world. I'm going to kill all the Jews and enslave all the Slavs and take over the world. And that'll be me. Ha, ha, ha. Look what he did. And then as he got into power and was doing what he was doing, he's not really mean. He doesn't really mean it. He doesn't really mean it. And of course, he meant it and he did it. So this is what's going on with the reset. This is why your book is so important. And it brings up the question, what, aside from voting, what can we really, really do to try to stop this?
I don't know. I mean, I've been asked this a lot, you know, obviously this over this last week since the book came out, but I'm you know, I'm not a prescriptive person. I can't give you and not you, JJ, but everybody. I can't present a 10-point plan that's going to make this all better. What the point I've been making, in apropos of our discussion here, is you have to have the intellectual framework in order to fight back. Otherwise, you're just a mob. So the Bolsheviks had one big idea, and they developed it with a small cadre of people. And when the time was right for them to move, they moved on the Kerensky government and got rid of it. They let Kerensky do all the heavy lifting in the first Russian Revolution. But they were prepared with a program. Now, it was crap, and it didn't work, and it was murderous, but they were prepared. And Hitler was exactly the same way. I'm not a guy who says, oh, my God, it's God was like. I've studied Hitler 50 years, and I've lived in that country, and I read the language, and I speak the language, and I've watched what he did, and every step of the way, he telegraphed exactly what he was going to do, and not just the Holocaust, but I'm going to invade this, I'm going to take this country back, I have the irredentists in Czechoslovakia that should be part of the Reich, I'm expanding my area of influence, and everybody went, yeah, right, he doesn't mean it. And he does mean it. Why not take them seriously when they say they're going to kill you? I grew up in the Marine Corps. That's one of the first things you learn. Trust me.
Yeah.
So perhaps Donald Trump was the beginning and Ron DeSantis is the man who was going to make the trains run on time.
I think Trump is John the Baptist. That's what I think.
Yep.
Make way the path of the Lord, boys and girls, because here he comes. And then along comes Jesus. So that worked out pretty good on that level.
Absolutely.
But I think he did have a lot of things right. He just couldn't execute it. He didn't execute it. And his enemies got him.
In all fairness to Trump, and yes, I do agree with you on, you know, he made some great moves and he made some boneheaded maneuvers. But at the same token, as the saying goes, from the movie The Right Stuff, they used to say, well, he screwed the pooch. Mm. And then I think at some point when they were talking about Gus Grissom, you know, the great Chuck Yeager came out and said, well, maybe the pooch was pre-screwed to begin with. Mm-hmm. And that may be the same thing with Trump. I mean, yeah, he wanted to drain the swamp, but it wasn't a swamp he was trying to drain. He was trying to drain the entire Pacific Ocean. And I just don't think he even realized the extent of the rot and the corruption of what he was dealing with. He might have thought, well, maybe it's just a few people in a few places and maybe the institutions are still good. But when everything at every level is absolutely rotten, not just the political appointees or the politicians, but the apparatchiks and the people at you know, you have the careerists who are out to subvert you and to commit insubordination. And then, as we've bemoaned in the past, you know, career people, ham and eggers like the FBI who get along to go along, or go along to get along, as I say, so they can preserve their jobs and preserve their pensions. So all of these things, I think, conspired against him in the end. It is kind of a miracle that we did achieve, or, you know, the economic miracle and all of these things, the Abraham Accords and so on and so forth, in the 3.5 short years that he did. But yes, you're right. That was his fault. He didn't see how the extent of the rot that was against him, and sadly, the Javanka aspect of it behind
his back. Well, that's it. When the vipers are literally in your own breast, and he had such a blind spot because he's so crazy about that daughter of his, to the exclusion of all of his other children, he couldn't believe that she would constantly stab him in the back. But as I've said, I was in and out of the White House quite a bit during that administration, and they were always referred to as the Democrats. We'd come up with an idea, would say, hey, what if we did blah, 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 and some senior advisor would say, well, the Democrats will go for it, but they won't, you know. So you felt like you were beat almost from the beginning of that administration because of his naivete and blind spot. And what I like the cut of DeSantis's jib is he seems to be pretty ruthless and not afraid. He doesn't require the adulation of the public the way Trump always did. And from the 80s on, he needed that.
You know, go ahead,
CB. Donald Trump's blind spot for his daughter does not absolve him of his catastrophic failures in personnel. I'm sorry. He made significant mistakes, and they were not presidential. They were childish and petty, and it hurt the United States. It hurt America. I love his grand thoughts. I love his image of America. I love his political philosophy. He simply could not execute. And I think that Donald Trump as the grand old man of the conservative movement is perfect for him.
Yes.
But once again, Michael, you're 100% correct. He's too damned old, and he's too much of a failure in terms of the people around him to be an effective president. Well, I'll say it. DeSantis and a vice president to be named later.
Let me ask you this. Let's, on that note, CBD, let me ask both of you a little bit of projection. So Ron DeSantis and Tulsi Gabbard or Marjorie Taylor Greene or whoever is the vice president, that would explode heads, wouldn't it?
Let's just say
you have this fantasy pick of these two people. Now, all of a sudden, what can they do that will thwart the, literally, you talk about insubordination and mutiny at every level that will be, even if they get all their picks, let's say they pick everybody that is absolutely in line with them and will support them at the heads of all the departments.
Well, let me give you an example of this,
because
it's not a secret. I can't go into any details, but I was offered a position or two in the administration near the end of the administration. It's right late summer, early fall. And one of the things I said was, what took you so long? You know, you went through Omarosa Manigo and Scaramucci, right? And I feel like this personality in the ugly girl contest here. But
you're handsome, man.
They did ask me, if you get this, would you be willing to go into X department and fire everybody you can fire? And I said, yeah. And 5 minutes later, what do you want me to do? You need ruthlessness. I'm sorry to keep bringing this up. I've become such a fan of the Romans. I have abandoned in part this whole notion of morality when it comes to politics, that either you win or you lose. That's it. You don't lose nobly. You don't lose gracefully. You lose. So how aren't we tired of losing? And I think that if DeSantis comes in and puts key people in the places where a president can actually put them, then you go to work on the civil service, because that's a terrible Republican idea from the late 19th century that is throttling this country. But you empty out those departments, you move them. I'm a big advocate, I've written about it several times, moving these agencies out of Washington. Send the FBI to Omaha, let them chase bank robbers out there. That's what they were meant to do in the first place. Move the Commerce Department to somewhere else in this, in the Midwest. You can take a hold of the beast as long as you don't care what the press says. And finally, that gets me to my final point, you've got to break the media. If you don't break the media, break them hard, they will poison you and stab you in the back forever. One thing I did do, I was in a conference with people not to be named, and they said, what do you think we should do about the press? And I said, whatever you do, this is very early, do not let Maggie Haberman anywhere near this White House. You go to the New York Times and you say, we will be happy to take any honest reporter you have, but not someone who is so overtly partisan that we can't get a fair shake. That's all we're asking. And you ask them that. They would have said, maybe screw you, no. But I went on and on about her because she exemplifies so much of the Trump hate from the beginning. And they stopped me, as God is my witness, and said, no, wait a minute, you don't understand. The president likes Maggie Haberman. They love each other. He talks to her. They have their private cell phone numbers. They are on the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning like boyfriend and girlfriend. You will never get him to agree to not letting her in this White House. And I said, that's it. That's the obituary for the Trump administration right there. And it was.
Well, you know, I have to see. Gewalt. But, you know, beyond just, but this, here's the thing, though. Then what happens? And now what happens? Okay, we have 8 years of DeSantis and maybe 8 years of Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tulsi Gabbard, whoever. Mm-hmm. Then what? What happens when a Democrat comes back into office? They ramp up. I mean, to me, it's, we're in a, as I've often stated, we're in this sort of interregnum period where we sort of, it's a zombie United States, and we're not going to get anywhere unless and until we can absolutely abolish every single bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. We're not going to get anywhere until we can fire the entire civil service. Yeah. And a reorganizing and a rejiggering, if you will, and there's a racist word, I can't say jigger on TV, a rejiggering of our governmental system, whereby these bureaucracies and these entrenched people never get the chance to put their mitts into us, where we reverse what was reversed to begin with, where the Ninth and Tenth Amendment are once again supreme, and all this other crap is wiped out. But for now, I'll be happy with a President DeSantis sending the Department of Redundancy Department to the Bering Sea. I'll be happy with that.
When you explain these things to people, what I'm trying to do with my columns now, the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, also the history of the Civil War, when you explain to people the history of it, then they understand why you're saying, I want to get rid of it. Right now, everyone's knee-jerk. I want to get rid of the 19th Amendment. Oh, you hate women. Actually, I love women. They're my favorite things in the world. But I may want to get rid of the 19th Amendment as well. So try to hold these two conflicting ideas in your head. You've got to educate people to be thoughtful and equipped with the facts so that they can argue the facts and not the emotions. Civil service should go. You go right back to Jacksonian democracy there. Throw the bums out there. All the bums go. Every single bum goes right out the door. That's what you have to do. Letting the agencies take over, the EPL, all this was Nixon stuff, by the way, a Republican, allegedly conservative president, worst domestic president ever. And what did it get him? What thanks did he get? They pulled a coup on him 2 years after the greatest landslide in American history. You can't please these people, so don't try. Just go fight them.
One of the tremendous advantages that America has over probably all but a few other countries in the world is that our economy and our people are still so economically nimble. And I think that Donald Trump proved that in 2016, within a matter of months. With the evisceration of these restrictive rules throttling our economy, it exploded. And a president who can look at the American people and say, we're going to grow the hell out of this country. You're going to be more wealthy in 2 years than you were today. And in the meantime, I'm going to eviscerate the administrative state. I'm going to shrink government. America will say, wait, I get another TV and I get a new car. I'm in.
Yeah.
And this speaks to what Michael said half an hour ago about the drive for freedom, at least in the Soviet Union, as he described, it was a drive for things. Well, any rational president can hand the American people those things, and it will go a long way to easing the transition away from this, you know, from the Leviathan back to a slightly smaller administrative state.
And this is just real quick, here's another anecdote. The tragedy of the Trump administration from the beginning, as you guys know, Steve Bannon's an old good friend of mine, and I admire what Steve is fearless. He's just absolutely, whatever you think of him.
What they are doing to him, by the way, is this is another reason why we cannot forget.
Right. But he is willing to take these hits because he's not afraid of them. And I was in Steve's office is right next to the Oval Office when you go in the West Wing. And he had a whiteboard on his wall with lists, right, all the way up and down, and things crossed off. I said, what's that? He said, this is a list of all of the regulations we are repealing. That was their first goal when they came in, was to take the government off the backs of the American people. And they were really being very successful at that. And as CBD just pointed out, it was like when Giuliani became mayor. All of a sudden, the squeegee men were gone. If you guys
know,
I was a New Yorker then. Overnight, literally overnight.
Yep.
And when Bill Bratton was appointed police chief, I remember seeing a news conference and some whiny New York City reporter girl was saying, yeah, but what are the squeegee men doing? What are they going to do? You know, the usual, right? And Bratton, in his Boston accent, said, well, we're going to arrest him and send him to jail. That's what he said. We're going to put him in jail. How do you like that answer? My God, these are applause lines in any movie. And yet we live our life as if the left somehow is a combination of psychotic nun and prison warden, and we're going to get in trouble if we say the wrong thing. The hell with this. Stand up.
Well,
that's my advice. Stand up.
I want to circle back to
what I love that.
Saki circling. Back to she's Rosa Klebb, but uglier, younger, or Chucky. What CBD just said, mentioning material things and giving people things. Here's the thing: the government has grown so vast, and the Democrats have inculcated this notion as the government as your father, as your mother, as Rush Limbaugh, peace be upon him, said, the government as Santa Claus.
As a norm.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We've got to break this notion of the government is going to give you the television set, as opposed to you are going to get out, get a job, and get a good paying job or a job that is fulfilling where you can advance yourself, where you can get yourself the goddamn television, if I can say that. And I think that's what this is, the whole, it goes back to, it's hockey circles back to the Great Reset. We have to get away from this notion of, and they don't even want to give you a television set. They want to give you a bullet in the head and send you to Bobby Yar, for Christ's sake, or while you eat a last meal composed of cockroaches and worms, and then the cockroaches and worms eat you in the grave.
Eat you. So it's recycling at its finest, right?
Right. So that is what we have to do. That is the really the challenge is breaking people of this notion that the government is there to help you when it's To Serve Man is a cookbook. And you know, I think this episode, our conversation has gone on so long, but it's been so fantastic. I think CBD, we're gonna, and Michael, I'm gonna break it up, but we're gonna break it up into two segments and post it that way. But the book is Against the Great Reset, 18 Theses Contra the New World Order, which is edited by Michael Walsh, and the contributors are a cast of absolute conservative and human superstars. And thank you so much for being with us. Any parting thoughts before we say farewell for the moment?
Well, I'll just say real quick, thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to be able to speak freely. And as far as the Against the Great Reset, I was tasked with putting together the 27 Yankees of center-right thought, and I hope we passed the audition, as the Beatles used to say.
Flying colors. CBD?
Boy, you know, I'm tapped out. I love the idea of a DeSantis administration, and I love the idea of a revitalized American economy. And I really love the idea of the home office of the FBI in Omaha, Nebraska. I think it's a wonderful idea.
I was thinking the home office of the FBI at the bottom of the Marianas Trench, but you know, let's go for attainable goals at this point. CBD, Michael Walsh, JJ Sefton, Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, buy Against the Great Reset, wherever you can get it. Thank you so much. We'll have you on again at some point, Michael, and for the rest of you, we will see you soon.
Thanks for listening, folks.
And I'll keep that in.